Morning.
You all right? I hope you are. Genuinely and sincerely hope that you are fighting fit, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, rocking and raring for the day ahead. Come on, get our bed, sleepyhead. Let's go. Wakey, wakey. Eggs and bakey. It's just gone 8 minutes past the hour. Oh, sorry, 0 minutes past the hour. It's just gone 8 a.m., which is summertime. On Friday. God, it's already Friday. Thank F, it's Friday. The 5th of June, the year of our Lord 2026. Tomorrow, the anniversary of D-Day, isn't it? As always, I'm joined by my producer, Little Harry. How are you this morning, good sir?
Morning, yeah, I'm all good.
And I'm joined, of course, by the glorious band, the chosen few, my band of brothers. You guys, without you, this isn't a thing. Basically the best people on earth, aren't you? I mean, give yourself a pat on the back. It's sort of undeniable. It's just objectively true. You're the best people on earth. Tuning in to Breakfast with Bo, the Bo Show, live. Bo's Breakfast Club, hashtag the real BBC. Lotus Eaters Breakfast Club, hashtag the real LBC. Should we stop faffing about, though? Should we stop fanning about? What's going to be in the news today? Well, it's an Andy day. The ex-Prince Andrew. Andrew Sachs Coburg Gotha, but the mainstream media, as always, legacy corporate mainstream media, you can imagine that cabal of evil Fleet Street editors who seem to have taken it on themselves to lie to you by omission every single day without possible. He's got a bit of a bruise on his face as old Andy. So you can only imagine. It's an Andy day tomorrow, guys. Yeah, everyone, all the editors in some sort of group chat. Yeah, everyone go with that Andy's got a bruise on his face. But, you know, remember, yeah, don't talk about Ehud Barak, though. Yeah, don't talk about Howard Lutnick. Yeah. Don't talk about Nathaniel Rothschild, the fifth Baron Rothschild. Yeah. Don't talk about Ken Starr or Bill Barr. Yeah. Make sure you don't mention Les Wexner. Alan Dershowitz. Definitely don't mention Alan Dershowitz. Or Larry Summers, or Mort Zuckerman, or Reid Hoffman, or Chelsea Handler, or Leon Black. Yeah, don't mention Anthony Acosta. Don't mention that time when Anthony Acosta was told to back off from prosecuting Epstein for child sex offenders because he was part of the intelligence services. Don't mention that. Yeah, got it. Good, good. Go. All right. But what slop have they served you up instead? All right, we've got Andrew cashed in. He was subletting properties on his royal estate. And Kate shares in mum's joy. So Kate Middleton, the radiant Kate Middleton, went to some hospital to meet cancer people. Cancer sufferers, people that are getting better. And she was there when one particular mum had got better from cancer, formally, officially. And Kate shares in that woman's joy. Okay. All right. Don't mention that Mohammed bin Salman was on the Lolita Express, though. Yeah, don't mention that. Got it. All right. The Daily Telegraph, the Tory graph, Andrew cashed in with secret rent deals. So this is the main story they've decided. They've all completely independently decided to go with today. I mean, it's all over the place. Look, Andrew's daughters, Andrew's estate. Oh, let's get rid of that. We don't want to support the son. It's a complete slop. Right, wall to wall, Andrew, largely. A couple of exceptions. Right, so what's the story? What's the scoop? So back when Andrew was still like a working royal and he was living on sort of the Windsor estate. I imagine he would stay in actual Windsor Castle itself. But anyway, it's a big estate and there's all sorts of different buildings and mansions and even outhouses for like servants and things. It's a big old estate. And, yeah, Then Prince paid peppercorn fee, i.e. just a nominal, absolute tiny amount of fee, just completely nominal fee, for Royal Lodge, but let out surrounding cottages. Now, as I understand it, and I might be wrong, as I understand it, that's not like illegal, full-blown illegal, but it is just completely taking the mickey, isn't it? Because a lot of these estates are renovated and paid for by the taxpayer. And so for him to pay the absolute minimum possible amount himself, whilst also renting out other buildings, cottages, I think to staff, and then he takes that money. Then he put that money in his pocket personally, like his personal bank account or whatever. And as I understand it, that's not illegal somehow, but it is not in the spirit of the thing, is it? It is cheeky and essentially wrong. Okay, there's all sorts of things that are wrong but aren't illegal, aren't there? All right. And look, there you go. I keep more than one paper called it a shiner. He's got a shiner. Got a massive bruise on his face there, if you can see that. Bit of a cut as well, perhaps. Some of the papers, a lot of the papers are saying no one knows what happened there. Others saying, one or two others say, it's part of a medical condition. It's not like he had an accident. He fell down the stairs and one of his horses smashed him in the face with its own head. That happens. If you're around horses a fair bit, eventually they sort of clatter into you one way or another. Eventually. Apparently it's nothing like that. It was some, if you can believe it, some sort of medical condition he's got, although they haven't said what it was. Either way, it doesn't look nice, does it? All right, so Andrew's got a shiner. White House rebukes number 10 over two-tier policing in Novak case. Yeah, that's interesting. The State Department. Well, it's the White House. Trump said something, and the State Department itself said a couple of things, chimed in on Novak. Elon did as well. Elon did a tweet or some retweets about it, saying this is a disgrace sort of thing. In fact, I think it was in the Mail, is it? Yeah, look, the Mail. Trump wades into Henry Novak scandal. State Department slams two-tier policing in Keir Starmer's UK. Yeah, at least the State Department statement was something to the effect of, there's a problem with two-tier justice, two-tier policing in the whole of the West. It did specifically say the UK, but also went on to say the West in general. And it must end. And it's like a civilizational level problem. Well, they're not wrong, are they? Again, two or even three times over the last 6 months or so, the State Department has chimed in on all sorts of injustices and evils and wrongs that are going on in the UK. And whenever they have, it's always been great. It's always been our talking points, really. You know, just pointing out something that's just an absolute obvious injustice. So I appreciate that. I appreciate that. Okay. Yes, yeah, so do you remember yesterday we brought you the story that RAF, or I think Royal Navy, actually Royal Navy Merlin helicopter had crashed in Devon and killing the three people on board. It says, Britain's only female commando among victims of helicopter crash. I don't know if she was the pilot or whatever, a commando, I don't know, but... Okay, Bumham, King Andy Bumham the First, no Sternum Burnham, says, I'll fight for number 10. I think he was on Newsnight last night. And even though everyone knows, he hasn't really made any sort of secret of it, and he's leaked loads and loads of times for a very, very long time that he wants to be the leader. And in fact, he entered into two previous leadership elections. Everyone knows. I don't think he'd actually 100% formally confirmed it. Or not in a while, at least. Not since this Makerfield election has begun, even though everyone knows. But on Newsnight, again, he did say it. He was just explicitly saying, if I win this by-election, and then if a Labour leadership election were to take place, I, King Burnham the First, no Sternum Burnham, would take part in that. Gets a round of applause from hand-picked lefty BBC audience members. Brilliant. Okay. Trump rages at Iran grandstanders. There's a thing yesterday. I was going to talk about it a bit yesterday, but we just didn't have time. Well, there was just other things to talk about. But the Democrats in D.C. on the Hill put out a... it wasn't a law or anything. It wasn't any sort of act or anything like that. But they just put out what amounts to little more than a statement saying they would like to rescind or curtail Mr. Trump's war powers with regards to Iran. But they haven't got the numbers in Congress. Or, no, some of the Republicans voted with them, so it would go to the Senate, but the Senate will almost certainly definitely block it. But in other words, it's the Democrats, before they've got the actual power, who knows what will happen after the midterms, but at this point they haven't really got the power to sort of stop Donald Trump doing what he's doing. They've got the power to sort of impeach him or all those sorts of things, but they can still sort of make noises, which is what they did, and Trump rages at them. Okay. The Daily Mail, ugh. Pure slop. Pure absolute slop. Subversive. So subversive. Trying to pretend it's actually patriotic in some way, on your side in some way. It's not. Little opinion piece somewhere in the paper says, hiding her son's bloodied murder weapon in the family home isn't what any mother would do. Yeah. Okay, I guess that's what she said because it's in quotation marks. What any mother would do. I don't know if that's the mum's words, her defence herself, or somebody else saying that, but this opinion piece by someone called Jan Moir, says, no, that's not what any mother would do. I mean, yeah. Isn't it just morally and ethically wrong to aid and abet a murderer, even if they're in your family? Okay. Right, the Daily Mail, they go with, they carry out no royal duties. We're talking about, this is talking about Andrew's daughters, Beatrice and Eugenie. If we got a picture of them, just so you know, just so you're aware. I know, maybe, sorry, it was on one of the, it was on one of the other websites, wasn't it? It was the Mail again, wasn't it? These two young ladies, Eugenie and Beatrice, can't remember which one's which. I think that one's, actually, I can never remember which one's which. It doesn't matter, does it? They're the daughters of Andrew. And we're told that they carry out no royal duties, but they do have jobs and are married with homes of their own. But Bombshell official report reveals Beatrice and Eugenie have lived at palaces rent-free for years. Not a giant big deal in the scheme of things, I think, but still. Not really in the spirit of it, of the whole thing, that their father would, the king would pay their rents. That was another data point, that the king, the crown itself, paid their rents. I mean, you know, Princesses Beatrice and Eugenie have never personally paid a penny in rent, despite living in exclusive palace properties for nearly two decades. Yeah, the office, the National Audit Office, when they're investigating Andrew, I've said all this. As Andrew spotted with giant mystery bruise on his face. It does look bad, doesn't it? I mean, obviously it's not a great picture. It's obviously taken a very, very long way away. Some sort of telephoto lens whilst he's in a moving car. Nonetheless, it does look pretty bad, doesn't it? All right, so minor royals, relatively minor royals, get to live rent-free in palaces. I mean, is that much of a scoop, really? I think that was already the case, isn't it? Well, I thought that was already the case. Is it somewhere like Buckingham Palace or Windsor Castle or Sandringham? Haven't they got dozens and dozens and dozens of bedrooms? Isn't that the whole point of those giant palaces? And I would have thought that Beatrice and Eugenie could just stay there for effectively for free. Okay, all right. Later we're told the king himself pays for it. The Duchy of Lancaster. Okay. All right. There's Kate Middleton, and she visited a hospital. Right, got it. Andrew and family rake it in. Shall I whip through these? Because it's sort of the same thing. Ex-Prince appears with bruise on his face at his outrageous rental income scheme, as his outrageous rental income scheme revealed, along with daughter's free accommodation. What a cheek. Do you get the clever, clever wordplay there? Because he's got a bruise on his cheek. What a cheek. Yeah. The Star. Get ready for football, by the way. I will keep it to a minimum during the World Cup, I promise you, as much as possible, but just brace yourself. A lot of the papers will be wall-to-wall football at some point. On those days, what I'll do, just to let you know, I'll show you it and talk about it kind of as briefly as possible, and we'll move on to other stuff. Maybe I'll start doing... If you remember the beginning of the Bow Show, towards the beginning, the first couple of months, I would quite often go to other countries. I've still got all the links. Look, there's the Aussie news. Japan, Australia, Russia, Germany, France. I used to do that a fair bit, didn't I? I sort of stopped doing it as much now, but maybe during the football, the World Cup days, I'll quickly go through the football and then just move on to other stuff. Maybe use it as a vehicle to talk about other things. How about that? Right. The Star says, cheeky rent deal. The grand old bruise of York. Because he was the Duke of York, as well as being Prince Andrew, he was also the Duke of York, wasn't he? And there's that old song, that old rhyme, the Grand Old Duke of York. The Grand Old Bruise of York. Oh, it's very, very clever. The Times, the Venerable Times. What have we got here? Yet Burnham confirms he does intend to challenge Starmer for leadership. Amazing. Andrew cashed in with Windsor Cottage sublets. It's funny, isn't it, how all these papers are supposed to be completely independent of each other. Completely, entirely different owners and editorial staff. And yet, they go with exactly the same thing, if not almost exactly the same image. It's like they're in cahoots, isn't it? Might be forgiven for thinking they're in cahoots, that it's one big cabal. All right. The Sun. What have we got inside? Oh, surprise. Oh, what a surprise. Oh yeah. I've gone with the exact same thing. As Andy shows mystery brews, ex-Duke pocketed Royal Lodge cash, sublet cottages, and lived rent-free. What a bloody cheek. Oh, another cheek pun. Another clever, clever wordplay about his cheek. The eye paper actually do go with something slightly different. It's still about the Royals, but not Andrew, at least. They go with that when Donald visited England last year, and he had a state visit. Remember Charles went there just a few weeks ago? Well, last year, Trump came here, and he got to stay at Buckingham Palace, I believe. Or maybe it was Windsor Castle. Anyway. Apparently, behind the scenes, old Sausage Fingers, Chucky Boy, Sax Coburg und Gotha himself, wasn't particularly up for it, wasn't particularly happy about it. Revealed King's private concerns over Trump's state visit to UK. King raised serious concerns about Donald Trump's state visit to the UK last year, the eye paper has learned, after a president's bust-up with Vladimir Zelensky. See, Sausage Fingers really cares about Zelensky. He's not supposed to have any political opinions one way or another, but he really cares about Ukraine and Vladimir Zelensky. And the fact that Trump isn't giving him endless and endless billions the way Biden did, it doesn't sit well with Sausage Fingers. Charles's private revelations left British officials... Charles's private reservations left British officials scrambling to salvage the trip, fearing that a royal snub could become major diplomatic crisis with US. Messages have been redacted to protect diplomatic relations, but the eye paper is briefed on their content. King was said to be jittery and did not want to do it. Again, naturally, their politics don't line up very well, do they? Their natural inclinations, their natural sort of world view is quite different. Chiles is some sort of weird globo homo, weird traitor, pro-Islamophile, like almost like a green pro-environmentalist idiot. That's who he is. Seems to barely be able to think for himself. And we all know Trump's politics, not really those things. So they're not natural bedfellows politically. Okay. Officials worked intensively behind the scenes to allay his concerns, the King's concerns, over state visit before Charles and Starmer discussed them at their weekly audience. King and Prime Minister then protected US support for Ukraine. All right, well, so bit of a different story, at least, from the Eye paper. They just didn't go with Andy's bruised face. The Express, it's a good paper. You can read your Express now. There we go. There's Kate Middleton, the Princess of Wales, future Queen. Isn't she looking radiant? She went to a hospital where this person, a mum, was declared all clear of cancer. You ring a bell there. You declared clear of cancer. Kate shares in mum's joy. Okay. Okay. The Guardian. Ooh. Ooh. Do you mind? Sorry. Do you mind? Guardian. Oh, what a disgusting stain on our society. No Sternum Burnham says, I won't flinch from need to fix the broken social care system. Really? Does anyone other than diehard Labour Party Keir Starmer haters, people whose career in the Labour Parliamentary Party has been completely stifled and ended by a Starmer government, other than those people and other people that suspect, think, hope that their career will be advanced should Burnham be leader, other than those people, does anyone really believe that King of the North, Andy Bumham, with his eyeliner and his double chins, will profoundly change anything? Does anyone really believe that? That he's going to shake up Whitehall, he's going to shake up Westminster? He's going to change the country, put us on a new track, a new track which is brilliant and great and saves the country, saves the Labour Party from electoral annihilation at the next general election. Does anyone really believe that? That he's the guy? That he's got all the answers? He knows what he's doing? He's like a policy god. He did a brilliant job when he was in government, an even more amazing job when he was Mayor of Manchester, and all you need do is supplant him and put him in number 10, and suddenly everything's fixed. Westminster, Whitehall, the country is fixed. It was Andy Burnham. King Andy the First is some sort of panacea, some sort of all-knowing, brilliant cover-all fix for everything that's going wrong. Does anyone really believe that? Manchester Mayor sets out plans for power if he wins in Makerfield. Broad interview also discussed Brexit, bond markets and migration. And we know what his opinions are on all those things at this point, basically, don't we? Not the things necessary. He hasn't got the political backbone, the spine, the vision to do any of the things that are necessary. In fact, he'll double down or take us further into the abyss. Sprint us even faster to the cliff edge, if anything, won't he? That's why I don't care if he... I mean, I would want Restore to win that by-election, but if it turns out that Restore had nicked enough votes off Reform to allow Burnham to win, I don't care about that. I thought all the Uri accelerationists out there would love that. Why Reform use that argument? Well, suddenly they really care about Starmer's career. If we all ultimately want Labour to get absolutely trounced as hard as humanly possible at the ballot box at the next general election, why not let Burnham do it, being the leader? Why not? He'll probably be as, if not more, unlikable than Starmer as leader, because he's more left, he's more insane, basically. We can't possibly let Burnham in because of the left. Well, no, well, it's only a tiny bit more left, really. It's basically the same. It's basically the same sort of weird Pinko traitor, isn't it? Basically the same. In fact, here we've got a few key points. Look, the Guardian have been good enough to do some bullet points for us. He said Labour should be a broad church. Okay. But that Corbyn wouldn't have a place in his government. Oh, okay. That's something at least. He signalled there would be no general election. That's what Nigel wants, isn't it? That's what all the reform people want. It was up to them. Every day that goes by, reform seemed to be bleeding support, broadly speaking. I think, might be wrong about that, but I think that's what's going on. Nigel wants a general election as soon as humanly possible. But Burnham and nearly everyone in Labour, that's just, you would think they're thinking, their calculation is that no, we need time to win the general public round again. So, yeah, he signalled that he wouldn't call a general election should he become leader. What is that? He said comments. Talked about the bond markets. And how politicians should not be in hoc to the bond markets. This is a thing. See, this is it. This is it. This is classic. This is why this man is a fool. A fool, an idiot, leftoid, know-nothing, empty shirt, cretin of a man. No trousers. He doesn't know what he's talking about. I always find this weird when lefties characterise the bond markets as evil in some way. That you're in hoc to them. Imagine this, right? Just imagine this in your own personal life, your own personal finances, right? You've borrowed loads and loads of money off the bank, or a credit card, say. You've borrowed loads and loads of money off of them. But you just keep spending, or you keep spending more even than you've borrowed. And you can barely afford to repay the interest payments. The bank, the credit card company, has been good enough to just let you repay the interest on your massive loans. You can barely, you're borrowing more money to pay off the interests, the interest repayments on your older borrowings. Right? That, imagine being in that sort of state of affairs in your own personal finances. Right? And then when the bank, the credit card, say, you've got to start paying this money, we're not going to allow you to not pay even that interest repayment, you start saying, oh no, you're bullying us. You're bullying me. This isn't fair. Like, it's not right that that you're putting pressure on us, that we're in hoc to you. No, you borrowed the money. Sorry, no, you borrowed the money. You entered into a contract to borrow the money. So, if anyone is in hoc, you put yourself in hoc. Do you not understand what's going on here? When lefties say that, they are usually idiot lefties as well, aren't they? That bang on about this. The evil bond markets. They're trying to screw us over. No, either that's just really, really childish and petulant, or you fundamentally don't understand what's happening. You fundamentally don't understand what it means to borrow and repay money. It's got to be one of those two things. But Andy Burnham goes along with all that. Politicians should not be in hoc to the bond markets. We borrowed the money. We borrowed the money. They didn't force us to borrow it at high interest rates. We borrowed it. We issued government bonds, gilt-edged bonds. There you go. That's leftist for you. They think that markets and capitalism is bad and evil, don't they? Okay. What else did he say? He agreed it would be a mistake to rerun Brexit. But did want closer ties to the EU. Of course he does. I bet he thinks that if he had the political capital just to return us to the EU, he would. But he hasn't. And certainly if he wants to win this by-election, he shouldn't be saying that. Certainly. So, all right. And he praised Shabana Mahmood for facing up to the big questions or the big issues on immigration. Really? There you go. That's the type of man he is. That's the measure of the man, that he thinks Shabana Mahmood is doing a good job on migration. immigration. He would he's praising her for facing up to it. She wants more safe and legal routes, doesn't she? She's one of those, because of course she is. Andy Burnham, if you want Labour to truly, truly collapse and not be a government again for another generation or two, or ever possibly, why not have Burnham as their leader? Why not? All right. The Metro, ooh. All right, they've got a slightly different story. Some little thing about the World Cup. Just a few seconds. FIFA, the governing body of football, said that at the World Cup, you can't bring in reusable, refillable water bottles of your own. It's probably going to be really hot, isn't it? Loads of it is in, is it Canada, the United States and Mexico, or just the United States and Mexico? Either way, definitely United States and Mexico. A lot of those places in the summer will be blisteringly hot, won't they? And they said, no, you can't bring in your own water bottles, reusable ones, refillable ones. They said they made up some nonsense about that people throw them at players and things. You have to buy our water. FIFA sucking fans dry. Supporters' anger as last-minute money grab, quote, money grab, as refillable carriers, water carriers, banned by tournament chief despite heat threat. All right, that's it. I'll just move on from that. All right. The Independent. The Independent. Some people think, some deranged leftists think the Independent is like right-leaning in some way. It's not. It's not at all. It's not at all. It hasn't been for a very, very, very long time. But their front page is Europe, the way back. Okay. Okay. I get it. 10 years on from the Brexit referendum, we remain divided over our future direction. Only if you're a crazy leftist who hates Britain having its own sovereignty. Only if you want us to be forced to have open borders. Only if you would like the ultimate authority to be and law courts to be in another country. We only remain divided if that's what you want. Over future direction, while the world around us has changed dramatically, today the Independent launches a campaign to build a better relationship with Europe. I see. I see. Fifth column. Absolute subversive slop. Traitorous, treasonous. It's not what the people want, the majority of people. And a more prosperous, secure and confident Britain. It's about being prosperous and secure, is it? Is it? Or is it about a globalist agenda that your owners and editors are being a peddle? It's more about that, isn't it? It's not about a prosperous and secure and confident Britain. It's about what your paymasters are telling you to peddle, isn't it, the Independent? Yeah. Yeah. All right, the Financial Times. What have we got? They go with a couple of things about AI. Some of the biggest AI companies are going to be floated on the stock market soon. So, and SpaceX. All right. Should we move on from that? It's already gone 5:30. Should we have a look at our poll? We usually do a poll, our poll, about this time of the day, don't we? I can't spend all morning this morning. Can't do like an hour and a half, an hour and 40 this morning. I'm supposed to be on the main podcast today. As well as maybe the Lab's Hour as well, so... I have to go and do my segment. But let's have a look at our poll. What did we ask you guys? We asked you guys, would you try and hide the knife if you knew your son had murdered someone with it? 87% of you say no. Yeah. 13% of you say yes, though. Hmm. Do you feel like it's the ethically and morally right thing to do to not hide it? Okay. All right. Shall we have a look at the price of oil real quick? Check in with the price of oil. West Texas, $93 a barrel. Brent crude, $95 a barrel. Why are you being charged so much at the petrol pump then, eh? All right. If you have a look at the main websites, let's have a look at the BBC. All right. The main stories we've already covered. Andrew taking the mickey about out of the taxpayer. And King Andy Bumham, the first of his name with his eyeliner, saying he would enter the leadership race. What else have we got? Zelensky proposes face-to-face talks in open letter to Putin. But I doubt, a lot of people saying, and I doubt Putin will do that, because Putin has said many, many, many times for a few years now that he doesn't recognise Zelensky as the legitimate leader of Ukraine even. So if he were to meet him face-to-face, sort of a tacit acceptance that you do accept him as the leader. So I doubt Putin will do that, but who knows, he might. UK in most dangerous period I've known, says military chief. A US military chief? Oh no, wait, is it? Earlier on I was reading it and it looked like it was the US military saying it. But I guess I got that wrong. It is a British one. I just thought when I read the... Oh, anyway, alright. Yeah, just saying that Britain can get involved to a minor extent with limited quick wars, but if there's like a long protracted war with someone, we just wouldn't be able to hack it. Probably. Trump's White House ballroom plan has doubled in size and cost over a year. Interesting thing, isn't it? We've not really talked about it much on the Bo Show, have we really? The ongoing saga of Trump's ballroom thing. They said when there was that latest assassination attempt on him at the correspondence dinner, that roast comedy dinner thing they do. That was one of the things Trump at that point used it as a way to say, look, we need our own completely 100% secure, venue for things like this. We can't, it's not great to just do it in some hotel in DC. We want our sort of perfectly secure premises. Okay. Like everything else Trump does, like partisan politics, even if it's a good idea, his political enemies and detractors will try and pour cold water on it or thwart it. You know? Like building the wall on the southern border, or bits of wall on the southern border, and giving the legal powers to prosecute anyone crossing the border illegally, and give those, the police and the army loads more sweeping powers to do it. Even though it's obviously a good and right thing to do, his enemies will just say it's evil and terrible and try and stop it. A bit like this ballroom, I don't see a problem with it. Who cares really? But they'll argue it's evil and terrible and ridiculous and stupid. AI needs a brake pedal, warns Anthropic co-founder. I thought this was interesting as someone who's not a fan of AI particularly. This guy, one of the co-founders of Anthropic, he's a Brit, actually, isn't he? Jack Clark, I think he's British. He said, we need to have the ability to slow AI down. Let me just read a tiny bit of this. Anthropic co-founder Jack Clark has called for the ability to slow progression of artificial intelligence, warning that the technology is nearing a point where it could develop without human input. Like Skynet going live. You mean? Like that. He said, We humans want the option to be able to take your foot off the gas and put your foot on the brake, Clark told BBC Newsnight. Right now, it's like the AI industry has a gas pedal, but it doesn't have a brake pedal. He stressed people, through government policy, need to keep control of AI systems, which will only get more powerful and have broader impacts on society. Quote, the world needs to do some thinking, and we need to eventually develop some new regulations that allow us to be confident in these systems, he said. Already, Anthropic's popular chatbot, Claude, never heard of it, is operating on code of which 80% of the system wrote itself. That's not worrying and dystopian at all, is it? You'd have to be some backward boomer Luddite to have any concerns about that, wouldn't you? Getting to 100% is possible within 2 years, Clark said, and would have huge implications. Yeah. Implications we couldn't really even begin to foresee. Clark did not outline how a brake pedal for AI research and development could be created, but drew a parallel between AI and the oil boom and barons of the turn of the last century. Okay, it goes on to talk about that. But yeah, so even like the Anthropic guy, it's like, maybe we're walking into something disastrous and worrying. Maybe we should think about this a bit more, what we're doing here. It's interesting that earlier in the week, there was all sorts of stories in the legacy corporate mainstream media. I don't think I brought them to you on the Bo Show, because they were sort of secondary and tertiary stories. They weren't really on the front page, but it was about how one particular Labour MP is trying to take X, Mr. Musk's ex, to court, sue him, or sue X, because people, or Grok, had generated an image of her in a bikini. And she thought it was sort of degrading in some way. So she's taking X to court over that. It's like, do you want AI or not? Weirdo leftist globalists who want to control everything, have state control of absolutely everything and everyone at all times. Do you want AI or not? Do you want it to be able to control everyone and everything, and then you hope you sit at the top like a Stalin figure or a Mao figure and puppet everything, and you get to live out your dreams, your fantasies of power? Or are you going to completely crumble if it generates an image of you in a bikini? What one is it? Have a complete meltdown at that. Can't have both. Can't have both, can you? All right. Let's see what else we've got. Was there anything? Oh, the Bayeux Tapestry is coming to... I know this is a bit different. The Bayeux Tapestry is being lent to the British Museum. I think they're showing it in, like, September. I'll have to do a bunch of content about that. Might even go there myself. Might get some of the Lotus Eaters, one of the Lotus Eaters lads, with a camera and a mic, and we'll go there and I'll walk along it. And narrating it, saying, look at this bit, look at that bit. Look at that. That would be cool, wouldn't it? The Bayeux Tapestry. Love the Bayeux Tapestry. Talked all about it a few times. Haven't got a completely 100% dedicated bit of content about it, I don't believe. But definitely talked all about it. Talked about the Conqueror and the Battle of Hastings in lots of detail. Lots and lots of detail in some of the earlier epochs. There's a multi-part series about William the Conqueror. Was it seven parts about that? Anyway, all right. So I thought that was interesting. I thought that was cool. All right, 20 minutes to go. If you don't mind, I'll start already, a bit early, but already with the On This Day in Politics, because we've got Rumble Rants and Super Chats also to do, because I do want to try and finish at 9, I'm afraid, this morning on this Friday. I've got a busy day ahead. All right, shall we have a look at what happened on this day in history, down through the centuries? What happened of note? You guys like that section, I believe. I do. 5th of June. Or one thing to say, because I'm not in tomorrow, right? There's no Bo Show on Saturdays. Tomorrow's the 6th of June. D-Day. Whenever it's fallen on a weekday, the last two or even three, is it even 4 years, I've done some sort of content about D-Day. But I won't this year because it's on a Saturday. But just to say, just to mention. All right, okay. On the 5th of June, though, what happened of note? On this day in 1873, Sultan Barghash bin Said, under British pressure, closes the infamous slave market of Zanzibar in present-day Tanzania. Oh, that's actually nice of this really quite woke website to even mention that. Under British pressure, we went round the world, or various parts of the world, trying to curtail or even stop human slavery. Yeah. Yeah. The abolitionist movement in Britain in the very, very early 19th century, or late 18th century, early 19th century, and then went on for decades to try and reduce the amount of human slavery in the world. Spent a vast amount of treasure and time and energy and political capital on that. And yet still to this day, in some quarters, like the mind of David Lammy, the Deputy Prime Minister, ex-Foreign Secretary, we still owe reparations for it. We owe reparations for it. Okay. Abolitionism in the UK, or England, Britain, right. William Wilberforce got a whole long form bit of content all about the career of William Wilberforce behind the paywall, loadseats.com. You consider signing up for as little as £5 a month, Bronze Tiers membership, My History Theme Show, Epochs, Bodades, Epochs. Okay, on this day in 1947, US Secretary of State George C. Marshall outlines the Marshall Plan to rebuild Western Europe. If anyone doesn't know, George Marshall, very, very important, influential person. He was basically the head, he was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff for a big chunk of, was it all, but at least a big chunk of World War II. So he was like Eisenhower and MacArthur's boss during World War II. Then after World War II, he had a political career as US Secretary of State, again, the US equivalent of the Foreign Secretary. And the US decided under Truman, and continuing under Eisenhower, because Eisenhower became president after Truman. Marshall and Eisenhower switch places and who's boss. Anyway, yeah, George Marshall and the Marshall Plan. That, you know, they're confronted with a completely devastated Europe, particularly Germany, of course. What to do with that? Should you just leave them to it, or try and help them out of that? Not just Germany, all sorts of Eastern Europe as well. A lot of the Balkans and Eastern Europe massively ruined and destroyed by the war in the East. Well, the US decided they would help. That's what the Marshall Plan is. Just invest in crazy amounts of money and helping them rebuild. You know, somewhere like Greece, for example. What Greece really needs right now, what they needed yesterday is like 10,000 horses, 10,000 pack mules. That's what they really need, above anything else. They need that right now. And like the Marshall Plan's like, right, we'll get them, send them. Right. Romania needs loads of carts, or just millions and millions and millions of dollars. Good, you've got it, fine. The Marshall Plan, you got it, go. Try not to completely collapse and implode and cause mass starvation. Very enlightened, really, the Marshall Plan. In centuries past, leaders probably wouldn't have, in the medieval period, they wouldn't have dreamt of doing stuff like that. Although some say it's cynical, it then puts you in hoc to the United States. But all right, anyway, I think the Marshall Plan was a good thing, probably, wasn't it? In terms of human misery. All right, on this day, 1963, a state of siege is declared in Iran, and Ayatollah Khomeini went on to become Ayatollah, is arrested. Yeah, that was it. So, what is it? They call it the White Revolution, I think it was. In Iran, Persia, as was, when the old Shah was still in charge. In, like, 1963, he brought in just loads and loads of reforms. Loads and loads of reforms, like quite a lot of them, like land reforms, agriculture reforms, a bit more freedom for women, all sorts of things. He's trying to make Iran, Persia, better. And the Islamists in Iran didn't like it. Someone like Khomeini didn't like it. So there was mass uprisings against it. And the Shah cracked down on it, arrested Khomeini. But that was the... I was going to say that was the beginning of a process. It wasn't even the beginning, but it was a big part of the process that, 15 years later? 15 years later ends with an Islamic revolution and Khomeini himself becoming the Ayatollah. So the 1979 Islamic revolution didn't come out of nowhere. People saw it coming for a long time. It was in the mail for a long time. All right, on this day, 1967, the Six-Day War begins. There's a picture of some bombed out, probably, Egyptian aeroplanes, I don't know. Six-Day War begins between Israel and the neighbouring Arab states of Egypt, Jordan and Syria. If you're interested in the war in Gaza at the moment, say, where to begin going back to learn about that? You could begin in biblical times, couldn't you? You could begin in the 7th century with the life of Muhammad. You could begin in the late 1940s. When Israel was established. One thing I think you definitely need to know about is the Six-Day War. There's all sorts of other, like there was the Suez Crisis before that, like the Yom Kippur War after that, many wars since then. But one of the key moments really for the story of modern Israel, 20th century Israel, is the Six-Day War, 1967. If you really want to start understanding things, definitely watch a documentary or read a book about the Six-Day War. It's basically when Nasser, the leader of Egypt, was sort of getting aggressive and massing divisions and tanks on the Israeli border. And Israel did basically a preemptive war. But they saw that happening, and they were like, we're not going to let that happen again, because Nasser had been belligerent towards them before. And so the 1967 was absolutely key and pivotal. That's when Israel take, like, the Golan Heights. It's when they take the West Bank, Gaza, the Sinai Desert, the Sinai Peninsula. They go to war with everyone around them and beat them all in 6 days flat. Because it was a sucker punch, really. Sort of a bit of a sucker punch. Preemptive war. None of those, even though those Arab states were probably, were sort of gearing up to attack Israel, Israel just pulled the trigger first. Anyway, it's important to know about the Six-Day War. It's a key event in all of this. And, well, tactically, strategically, a complete victory for Israel. They ended up, like, giving most of, or a lot of the Sinai back to Egypt. But, okay, in order to understand the current Israeli-Palestinian conflicts, intifadas, got to know what happened in the Six-Day War. All the background to it and everything, really, I would say. All right, on this day in 1968... Sirhan, Palestinian Sirhan, that man there. He assassinated Robert Kennedy Sr. That man there, John Kennedy's little brother, shooting him 3 times and wounding 5 others at the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles, California. Kennedy dies the next day. In fact, I believe the fatal shot on Robert Kennedy was from one of his own bodyguards. It's a really, really weird thing. The assassination of Bobby Kennedy. It's really odd. Just like his brother. Loads and loads of just odd things that don't seem to add up. They were taking Kennedy back through the hotel, like through the kitchens, to take him out back to get him into his limo and take him off. And this guy, Sirhan, apparently was just waiting there in like sort of the kitchens or something, or a corridor, waiting to assassinate Bobby Kennedy. And then as Bobby Kennedy and his bodyguard walked by at sort of point blank range, Sirhan allegedly just starts firing. And then Bobby Kennedy's bodyguard, also in the confusion, this sort of point blank melee of firing goes off. Shots in the ceiling, in the wall, everywhere. Kennedy gets hit a bunch of times. I think the fatal bullet wound actually came from one of his own bodyguards. But anyway, later, people, of course, and Sirhan isn't killed in that gunfight. Later, he went on trial and forevermore. He's still alive. I think he's still alive in prison now. They asked him, what was your motivation for doing this? And it's weird. He changed his story loads. Everything from it's to do with Palestine and Israel to I don't remember doing it. Like some people said, a bit on the fringes of it, but people say perhaps he was some sort of really, really elaborate intelligence services. Just like the murder of John Kennedy. It's hard not to come to the conclusion there was some sort of elaborate game playing going on. Something's fishy, something's up. Things don't seem to make sense, really, about it all. Look into it for yourself. If you think I'm being a bit of a tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy theorist to describe it and characterise the assassination of Robert Kennedy to you like that, look into it yourself. It's weird. He changed it. Sirhan changed his story loads. And even, as I say, even said, I have no recollection of doing this. Like, I seem to be, I'm a bit of a blank. All right, well, all right. Could talk all about it for a long time, but must move on. On this day in 1981, the AIDS epidemic officially begins when the US Centers for Disease Control reports cases of pneumonia in 5 gay men in Los Angeles. Oh, well. On this day in 1984, Indira Gandhi orders an attack on Sikhism's holiest site, the Golden Temple, in Amritsar. And, of course, she was assassinated, wasn't she? Anyone knows about Indira Gandhi? She was like the leader of India. I think the only female leader they've ever had, but she was the leader of India during like the late 60s and early 70s. And then again in the 80s, in the early 80s. And there was sort of loads of like Sikh separatist unrest, a bit more than unrest really, in India. She decided to crack down on it, try and crack down on it, which she did. I can't believe thousands of them killed or even tens of thousands of them imprisoned and stuff. She cracked down on it. Unfortunately, a couple of her own personal bodyguards were Sikhs. So one day, when she's walking along in a garden somewhere, her own bodyguards murdered her. There you go. There you go. All right. Shall we have a look at our rubber ends and super chats? It's nearly 9 o'clock. If I whip through them, we go. We only got two rumble rants today. Only got two. All right, global church history in at number one, reigning, defending, undisputed. Global church history. Okay. Thanks for the super chat, sir. I love your dedication. Saying, on this day in 70 AD, Titus took Jerusalem. Ooh, yeah. Titus, the son of Vespasian, so the emperor of Vespasian, ending the year of the four emperors. Got content all about the year of the four emperors. After Nero's complete collapse and suicide, there was a year where there was four different emperors in Rome, one after the other, military usurpers. Finally, Vespasian turns up from the east, the most powerful of them, and becomes emperor, and starts a whole dynasty, and reigns as emperor for ages, like 10 years, 15 years. That was the year before. The year of the year of the four emperors is 69 AD. 1 year later, he sends his son, Titus, his son. He's got two sons, Titus. The other one, the younger one's called Domitian. Who himself becomes emperor at one point. Well, for quite a long time. Got content all about Domitian. But for the time being, where Vespasian has left the east, he was a general of the east. He sends his son, Titus, back to east to put down the first Jewish revolt. Jewish revolt against Roman rule. And Titus does a number on them, shall we say. He surrounds, besieges, starves out Jerusalem, takes it, sacks it entirely, destroys the second temple. And they erect an arch of triumph to that in Rome, which still stands there today. Some Jewish people were still butthurt about that to this day. Quite literally, in the 21st century, go to Rome, stand in front of the Arch of Titus and flip it off and take a video of themselves doing that and post it on the internet. I mean, let it go. It was a long time ago, right? All right. The other factoid from Global Church History says, and in 1661, Sir Isaac Newton was admitted into Cambridge. Now, so I haven't done any, I don't think I have, any specific long-form content about the life and career and work of Sir Isaac Newton, but I have mentioned him in passing a whole bunch of times, and fascinating, fascinating person, Isaac Newton. Not just his Principia Mathematica, but he, as a man, fascinating. Like a true, true genius person, obviously, stating the obvious. Like, just way out ahead of his time. Way, way out there ahead of his time. Should make some content just about Isaac Newton. Okay, next one we've got Jeffrey Farnell says, another fun Trafalgar Square fact is that for decades there was a statue of General Gordon in the middle. I've got a whole long form bit of content about Gordon of Khartoum, Gordon of China, one of our great Victorian statesmen and military leaders, General Gordon. Got himself killed at Khartoum in the end, didn't he? There was a general of a statue of General Gordon in the middle. It was removed in World War II and typically never returned. You can still see where it was if you go there. Yeah, quite right. Interesting fact. Okay, Dragon Lady Chris says, if I remember correctly, Titus was the first emperor to succeed his biological father to the imperial throne. That sounds about right. Yeah, it probably would be, yeah. Yeah, it would be. Good factoid. Titus only ruled for 2 years after Vespasian finally died of natural causes, I believe. His heir apparent, an eldest son, Titus, became emperor, but only for like about 2 years before he died of natural causes. In the pre-modern world, even if you were young and fit, you could get a disease or some sort of illness, and you're not quite able to fight it off, and that's it, you die. So Titus should have ruled for a lot longer than he did, but he only ruled for about 2 years, and people say he was one of the good emperors. He was one of the just emperors, a good ruler. But he died, and then he didn't have children, legitimate children, and so the imperial diadem passed down to his younger brother, Domitian, who was really, really, really evil tyrant, one of the worst ones, like Caracalla or Caligula or Nero, like a bit of a psycho serial killer type dude. If you believe the accounts. You want an hour or two of me talking all about it? Oh, it's all there behind the paywall. Okay, let's do... That's the only rumble rants we've got this morning. Let's do the YouTube ones. Harry, if you can bring that up on my screen. Thank you very much, sir. Engage. There they are. Okay, we've got a dozen or so or more. Okay. Dr. Molotov says, as a nuclear accident connoisseur... Have you read about the SL-1 in Idaho? Yeah, I know about that one, yeah. A prompt critical explosion, man impaled by control rod and pinned to the roof. Yeah, it was a bad one, wasn't it? That was like early on, that was like in the 50s, wasn't it? There's actually, if you went to on Wikipedia or anywhere really, and or just Google, and asked for a list of all the nuclear accidents that have happened, there's loads, there's actually been loads. Obviously, Chernobyl is the worst one by so far, but minor ones. There's loads. There's loads of them. Most people just never heard of them. But yeah, I do like to think of myself as a little bit of a nuclear accident connoisseur. I quite often, well, not maybe not often, but over the years, I've just watched a documentary or a video about little known ones that most people haven't heard of. Find them fascinating. Yeah, that was a bad one. People died, right? Multiple people died. So, usually... Like, no one dies, or one person gets really badly irradiated and dies, but this was a multiple one. Okay. Kick You in the Throat, that's their name, at Kick You in the Throat, says, looking sharp, custom-made, built for speed. I'm looking sharp, you say? Is that a personal compliment to me? I hope so. I think so. I'll take it. Either way, thank you very much for the super chat. Something Wickedly Superfan Shona says, I wouldn't want elites visiting me if I was ill. Oh right, like Kate Middleton at a hospital, yeah. You probably don't need it. Although that woman she just stopped being ill. She just got better from cancer. But still, yeah, you probably don't need it, do you? I'd rather not. If I was in hospital. Yep. Tatum 2733 says, I think this was a really bad poll. The dig was had Henry there dying, not an abstract choice after the fact about whether to hide the knife or not. Well, no, I just completely disagree with you. Yeah, don't cover up for a murderer. Don't really know what you're saying there. Don't really get your take there. The dig was had Henry there dying. Not an abstract choice. I didn't say it was an abstract choice. Okay. Rince Wind 67 says, F Kate, Bo, you look radiant. Thank you. By the way, not gay. On this day in history, that's fine. That's fine. On this day in history, in 1979, nothing of note happened. Dull days have feelings too. Keep the faith, bro. Cheers. That's interesting. Yeah, like an unbirthday. It's my unbirthday today. A very merry unbirthday to me. It's probably your unbirthday today, isn't it? Dull days have feelings too. Okay, another one from Kick You in the Throat for a generous amount of money. Thank you, Kick You in the Throat. You say, Anglo World fun fact, Yorkshire botanist Thomas Nuttall spent decades in the US West, discovering and cataloguing. Unsung in England and the US, he is the father of Western American botany. Also did a big book on US birds. That is a fun fact. I don't think I've ever heard of Thomas Nuttall, the botanist, and ornithologist, if you did a book on birds. Interesting. I like facts like that. I like learning new things. Rincewind67 again said, oh, and forgot to add in regards poll, if the victim was a Savile or a Rudica Bactana type, then I could be persuaded to change my vote. Hypothetically, mind. Right, okay, fair enough. I see what you're saying. Mr. Dickie Bingo says, the fridge rainer is basically Burnham in drag. Put Burnham in a wig and a frock and some stupid trainers and you can't tell him apart from Angela the Fridge Rainer. If he starts mimicking all her movements like in a mirror, no one can tell which one's which. Okay, Pence Hader says, where has me air gone? Honey, that thing. It seems like a normal sentence, but he's got me to actually say, where has my hair gone? He's put whereas, you know, like whereas something else. Me air, as in breathing air, gone. Where has me hair gone? Where has my hair gone? Oh, male pattern baldness. Too much test. That's what it is. Just too much test. Noticer 786 says, I need a haircut actually, don't I? I should never let it get this long. Noticer 786 says, strange how every parent of a young white victim has a segment in their speech about not making it about race and not causing further division. Just odd how it's a copy and paste every time. Yeah, well, they've got nudge units, haven't they? Home office nudge units, where they tell the grieving parents in their moment of grief and mourning, say something about anti-racism, though, yeah? You don't want to stoke tensions, though, right? Just say it's got nothing to do with race or religion or tribalism or anything. You say that, yeah? I know. It's so disgusting and cynical. Okay. Amazing Disgrace. Amazing Disgrace. Love it. Says, I didn't vote in the poll because there are circumstances where I'd hide a knife and tell my son I was proud of him. Okay, well done. Adam Waller says, resolving distances below the plank length requires such a concentration of energy that it produces a black hole, therefore preventing the measurement. Yeah, I did a tweet. I think this person must be responding to a tweet I did last night, where I just said something about the Planck length. If you don't know, Max Planck, the physicist, came up with the smallest possible unit, smaller than an atom, smaller than a proton or electron, smaller than quarks, and even orders of magnitude smaller than that. Millions of times smaller than a quark. You get down to the Planck length. The tiniest possible measurement. It's like the distance a proton would move in the smallest amount of time ever, like a single instant, that length, the Planck length. Anyway, I said, the human scale, are we closer on the human scale on this planet? Are we closer to the Planck length, the smallest possible unit of measurement, or the entire observable universe? And if you just look it up, it is that we're like 400 million times closer to the size of the entire observable universe. In other words, the Planck length is unimaginably small. 400 million times smaller than the 90 billion light year across observable universe. You can't wrap your mind around how big the observable universe is, and the Planck length is 400 million times smaller on a scale than that. Mad, isn't it? So if you say, if some people said that the humans, we're somewhere halfway between the Planck length and the observable universe. No, no. We're right near the upper end. In the scheme of the cosmos, we're humans, the human scale is quite big. It's weird to think of that, isn't it? I don't know. I find that sort of thing fascinating. All right. What else have we got here? Brandon Lucas said, what's your favourite historical Israeli military op? Oh, there's the Entebbe raid, that one. Every now and again on Epochs, I do a bit of content about special forces raids. I think I've done 4 or 5 or 6 of them. There's one in Entebbe in Africa where, was it Idi Amin had, or forces, is it Idi Amin? I think it was. God, I can't remember now. They've taken a whole aeroplane of like Israelis hostage in like a Ugandan airport. And is that right? Anyway, the Israeli special forces went there and tried to save them all. Saved a lot of them. Oracle. Maybe that one. Okay. Wasn't Benjamin Netanyahu's brother killed in that? Is that right? Okay, I can't remember it all off the top of my head. Aristotle Luton says, morning, Bo. Morning. Did you catch Question Time last night? Reform guy was a bit milquetoast. Have a good weekend, sir. Well, thank you very much. I didn't watch it. I see a clip of Andy Burnham on it, but I didn't watch it. I can't stand Newsnight, largely. It's sort of insufferable. Sort of insufferable to me. So I didn't watch it, but I have seen a couple of clips. But anyway, I hope you have a good weekend too. All right, Brendan Lucas says, ITV drama said Queen Liz the First is a transgender. True? Question mark. An ITV drama? I don't know what one you're talking about. I don't watch much TV. Certainly not an ITV drama about the Queen. But of course she was not transgender. Of course not. All right. JC Warlock says, Castle Monster. It's the same guy often on Rumble Rants talking about. Oh, and they've also put a Rumble Rant saying the same thing, Castle Monster. I have to check it out. I will do. In fact, I did, actually. Sorry, I did. I did look up Castle St. George at Loch Ness. Yeah, I did. Looked it up. Yeah, interesting. I'd like to go there. I'd like to visit it. Be a great day out, wouldn't it? Okay, and the last one here today from Brendan Lucas says, Achilles confirmed to be played by Ellen Page. There's that Christopher Nolan Odyssey film coming out, isn't there? And there's a bit in the Odyssey where Odysseus goes down to the underworld and meets some dead souls. In the original book, he meets Achilles, the greatest warrior of the Trojan War, who by that point is dead. Sort of a famous bit, one of the more famous bits from the Odyssey, actually, where he speaks to the dead Achilles. Achilles said, I'd do anything, give anything for one more day of life to be on the earth. I'd swap everything I've got for that, for one day as a slave back on Earth, rather than live down here in Hades. And it got leaked that Ellen Page might have been cast as Achilles for that. Sorry, Elliot Page, isn't it? Shouldn't dead name Ellen Page? His name is Elliot Page. But someone saying, no, you know, don't worry about it. Elliot Page hasn't been cast as Achilles. It's just some other character that Odysseus meets in the underworld. Where if Brendan Lucas is to be believed there, it's the first time hearing of it. It is indeed. Elliot Page is, in fact, cast as Achilles. So that's weird. Achilles is supposed to be one of the baddest ass humans. Well, it's not even human, semi-human. Demigod ever to have lived. You know, it should be someone like Big Dave Bautista or something. John Cena. I don't know. A good actor though, get a good actor. Someone who's really, really Chris Hemsworth, who's hench and big. believable as a badass killer, leader of men and killer. Not Ellen Page. Okay, that's the show. That's the last one. It's just ticked 15 minutes past 9 in the AM British summertime on Friday, the 5th of June in the year of our Lord 2026. Thank you for joining me. You're the best people on earth. The best people on earth. Without you, it really isn't a thing. Try and make the best of the day ahead and indeed the weekend ahead. Right, carpe diem, seize the day. Your time is the most precious thing you've got by so far. It's finite. Try and use your time wisely if you can. All right, I don't want to get too preachy about it. Until Monday morning then. Take care.